Okay.
Administrative lawyer.
We're ready to resume, ladies and gentlemen.
Take a bite.
Please take your seats.
Listening in them. They don't breathe.
I apologize for how warm it is in here. I don't know the cause, but it's beyond our control, whatever it is. So forgive us for that inconvenience. Our next member of the public who's going to address us is Judith Johnson, followed by Robert Birch, and Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. I'm Judith Johnson. I live in South Jordan, Utah. I am a Rocky Mountain power customer, and I do not have solar. I'm not a net metering customer.
And are you intending to offer sworn testimony?
Yes, I am.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please proceed. Oh. And are you representing any group here tonight?
No, I'm representing myself.
Thank you.
Yeah. As I said, my name is Judith Johnson. I worked for the Division of Public Utilities for 13 years, the last several as manager of the energy section. I also worked as an electric utility stock analyst for Lehman Brothers in the years before Lehman Brothers became a bad word. So, I have some expertise in price regulation for electric utilities. I also admit to a bias. I was energy manager in the years 2000 and 2001 when the electricity price crisis, during the electric price crisis when, according to Wikipedia, there was an 800% increase in wholesale prices from April 2000 to December 2000. I vividly remember the crisis and trying to recover from it in a way that was in the public interest. That means I, as a regulator, neither wanted the utility to go bankrupt. Not so good for the economy of Utah, reliability, or prices in the future. Nor did I think it fair to charge customers who had no control over the purchase of power for the amount. We worked through it, but many of us have not forgotten that time. Avoiding that cost, that high cost during any hour of the high use time would have been of great benefit to the company who had to absorb some of the excess power costs and all users who paid a significant portion of those costs as an add-on to their existing rates. Following that crisis, I became quite a scold to anyone that in the company who would listen or had to listen during negotiations, meetings, etc. I would natter on about how we in Utah must do everything in our power to lessen the reliance on purchased power, to lower peak usage, conserve energy, and on until people probably wanted to run away when I began to talk. So when I became aware that Rocky Mountain Power wanted to start charging a monthly fee for solar, which seems unnatural in this sun-washed state, and an answer to my quest for clean, renewable energy available at high use times, I became interested. I was surprised to see that both the division and the Office of Consumer Services recommended their charge. I've read the testimony of those agencies, as well as Rocky Mountain Power's, and have some points that, as a former regulator, I think need to be made. The first point of my citizen's testimony is to declare out loud that something that everyone that works for and in the industry knows. Price regulation is an imprecise methodology and is based on averages. That doesn't make it ineffective or unfair. I'll give an example. Electricity users who live in the rural areas require longer transmission and distribution lines than do those users in densely populated areas. Then go further, I live in a PUD, and to service my home and others in the area requires even less because some of the homes are joined together, so it even less. But there's no attempt, or should there be, to quantify the difference in cost to my PUD home and a rural user who is miles away from the next user. Price regulation must use averages, and by doing so will cause more costs to some, and by doing so, some customers will cause more costs and some will cause less than the average. That's the nature of average. There is no attempt to set precise prices, and trying to do so would cost more than is reasonable. Price regulation has successfully relied on the use of averages to set prices for as long as there has been price regulation. The second issue is in regards to Senate Bill 208. According to the Tribune, it requires that that net meter customers they can be charged for the cost they incur to the electrical grid, but they also want the PSC to weigh those costs against the benefit net metering provides. The reading of Rocky Mountain Power testimony is that the analysis has been provided, and the acceptance by the DPU and the OCC constitute enough evidence that the Public Service Commission can make a determination that net metering customers can be charged a monthly fee. However, I find several areas of the filed testimony that argue against setting a monthly net metering charge at this time. There are two aspects to consider. Do the net metering customers incur a significant cost to the grid that is shifted to other ratepayers? I emphasize the word significant because, again, price regulation is imprecise and based on averages. The other side required is an analysis of the benefits net metering provides. Turning first to the cost side, I think that the model that the company provided and that the DPU and the office, I believe they've both accepted that. I think it's very, very simplistic. Basically, what it shows is that the average fixed cost are for transmission and distribution are a certain number. Some of that is captured in that $8 fee that somebody else testified about. Some of it is captured through volumetric charges. And since the net metering customer uses less of that volume, then they are not meeting their full share. But, you know, if you think about it, as I have, that maybe a customer who lives in the mountains in a cooler area, still a Rocky Mountain customer, but they don't own an air conditioner because it's so much cooler than in the valley. They and most of their neighbors use this much lower than the average user in the Salt Lake Valley. What about those who live in the valley and can't afford air conditioners? Isn't their usage lower than the average? Shouldn't they also be charged to the fixed charge for their less than average volumetric use? It doesn't make sense that this is what this charge is based on. I don't think that's an adequate analysis. It is just such analytic problems that reiterate the idea that price regulation is imprecise and based on averages. So trying to determine accurate cost shift is an imprecise and, frankly, I think useless task. Excuse me for a minute. Rocky Mountain Power also asserts that there may be increased wear and tear on equipment caused by the intermittent nature of customers' generation. Mr. Dan Gimbel, who testified for the office, asked the questions. Well, what are those costs? They asked the question to Rocky Mountain Power in a data request. And basically the customer says the company doesn't know. It says it doesn't have a repository for system upgrades and the corresponding costs for each individually net metering project are collected. They assert that there is a cost, but they don't know what it is. Again, not enough analysis. as far as an adequate analysis for the benefits, I can't see where that's ever been made by the company, the DPU, or the Office of Consumer Services. And yet, Mr. Duvall for Rocky Mountain Power, in his rebuttal testimony, says there is enough evidence for the PSC to make a determination, and it's fulfilled the SB 208 requirement. I am, of course, paraphrasing what his testimony is. And he talks about the avoided cost, an avoided cost docket that says that puts the value of solar power at 3 cents, where they're going to be compensated for the retail price, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that's probably a very good substitute to find out what the benefits are. But in looking through the electric dockets, I believe I found a better way to value the net metering power. For example, what I found was that Rocky Mountain Power has made an application in docket number 14-03585. And this is an application for approval of the power purchase agreement between PacifiCorp and Enterprise Solar. This is an 80 megawatt capacity solar provider, and the prices that they are willing to pay are in Exhibit 5.1. Now, much of the application and this exhibit are redacted, so I don't know what those numbers are. The member of the public doesn't, but that could be made available through a confidentiality agreement. Parties could have access to that information. That to me would be a much better way to see what the value, what the company on the market determines that the value of solar is. If you have this docket open and you look at different ways of valuing the benefits provided, that'd be an excellent source. None of that's ever has been done. But there are tools available to do that, but it hasn't been done yet. The office, again, asked some really pertinent questions. The office requested detailed data on the energy and capacity avoided by residential net metering output on an annual total dollar and kilowatt hour basis. They asked for this information. How much was being done? The company was unable to provide any analysis of benefits stating, the company does not measure the output of the customer-owned distribution generation facilities. And then, again, this is quoting from Mr. Gimbel's testimony. The office found the response somewhat perplexing because the company surely has the capability to at least estimate the aggregate output profile of residential net metering and determining the resources that net metering production was offset over different time periods. Then Mr. Gimbel also states in his rebuttal testimony on page 4, the company's inability to timely furnish any information or analysis relating to net metering benefits continues to be a major deficiency in this proceeding. So it's recognized even by a party who has accepted the amount that the company proposes that should be charged, saying that the analysis is not adequate. That's how I would read that. The office, as it has been previously by a previous witness, has stated that the office basically is saying, look, we need to get this put in place. Too much uncertainty. Let's get it put in place. I contend that the amount of missing analysis argues that a docket should be open to analyze both the cost and benefits to satisfy the requirements in SB 208 before any net metering customer charge is considered. It is not possible, with the analysis provided in the current docket, to establish whether there should be a net metering customer charge, let alone the exact number that the charge should be. waiting until adequate analysis available, as required under SB 208, will cause much less uncertainty than if his charge is established now and has to be rolled back, or if it impedes the progress of this important resource to Utah ratepayers. That, to me, causes more uncertainty than it will cause if you wait for a while until you have better information. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Johnson? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Robert Birch, followed by Linda Johnson. And if Ms. Johnson's here, she would take a seat in this purple chair near the witness stand. That would be helpful. Thank you. Mr. Birch, do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated. Would you provide your name and spell it for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Robert. Physician at the University of Utah. I'm an assistant professor in the School of Medicine in psychiatry. I do not wish to speak about pollution. Enough has been said, although I will mention that I'm sure that Rocky Mountain Power's rebuttal would be that most of the pollution in Salt Lake is a function of the exhaust and carbon monoxide of automobiles. I do own shares of Consolidated Edison, small number of shares. I am a resident of Salt Lake County. I do not use net metering. I have no other financial interest. I am not a member of Mesa or Sierra Club or any other environmental group, although I probably should be. I would like to speak as a private citizen, though. First of all, and I would also like to offer an alternative to the tax or fee or surcharge or whatever Rocky Mountain Power chooses to call it. I want to thank the commissioners, first of all, for being here and their ancillary personnel, as well as the others who are here officially and unofficially, as well as and emphasize that I appreciate your return of my email encouraging me to speak. Thank you, Mr. LaVar. Let me say that I'm concerned. My information comes from the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm concerned about a couple of things. One, I probably will not have solar panels and be a net metering customer because at my age, I'll probably never get it repaid. Therefore, if we do not have the surcharge or fee or tax, I'm more than happy to pay it. I think the last testimonial that was given about it, cost averaging, is significantly important. I have always been in favor of that, and I do appreciate it. I am concerned about a couple of things, particularly. One is the study, the theoretical a priori study that was done by Rocky Mountain Power. It was not a factual study in the sense of an empirical study that was done. It was a theoretical study. If we had done that in medicine, many of you are old enough to remember the children, the babies that were born without legs and without arms because of the use of thalidomide that was not properly tested. If we used that standard in medicine, many of our children, many of you, many of us, would have deformities that we need not have. We have to go through a period of testing. One of my suggestions will be that we go through a period of testing with selected solar customers before any fee or tax is assessed to get the empirical evidence and then allow the commissioners to make an informed decision. Just one other point. It seems irrational to me for Rocky Mountain Power to offer a rebate for installing LED lights, any other energy-saving device, or any grants for solar, and then turn around and charge. That doesn't make any sense. That's the equivalent to me of a few years ago having Questar give me a rebate for insulating my house appropriately, and then coming back later and saying, well, you have an excellently insulated house. We need to charge you for that because we're going to be using less gas.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. It's irrational. The alternative that I propose, which nobody's going to be in favor of, but it seems to be reasonable to me, is to take over a period of time, not a month, not 2 months, maybe 2 or 3 years, a set of solar customers who utilize solar, and then see what it really cost Rocky Mountain in terms of what they're allowed to resell, the avoidant cost that we've talked about, what it really, really cost to them to do it, if it costs them. In fact, it may not cost them at all. It may add to their stockholders' dividends. I am in favor of leaving the so-called sun tax on the docket and making suggestions, not at a lower rate, as one consumer advocate has suggested, but simply leaving it on the docket and doing an empirical study over the next year or two, and then see where we are. Thank you very much, and I'm willing to take any questions.
Questions for Dr. Birch? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Birch, you're excused. Linda Johnson, followed by Todd Stevens.
I'm Linda Johnson. I'm a resident of Salt Lake County. I'm registered to vote in the county. I am a customer but not allowed to have solar panels on my house because of our PUD.
And are you representing any group here tonight?
I'm representing myself. I speak only for myself, but in my work, I serve on many environmentally sensitive groups. I'm on the board of Breathe Utah, Natural Resources Director on the board of League of Women Voters of Salt Lake for many years, member of the County Health's Environmental Quality Advisory Council, and appointed by Governor Herbert to his Clean Air Action Team, and other things like that. Dr. Birch was very convincing, and I am simply going to give you more reasons to support his request. The electric power...
Ms. Johnson, before you begin,
yes.
Are you intending this to be sworn testimony?
Yes, please.
All right. Would you mind?
Yes, sir.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Absolutely. Okay. The Electric Power Research Institute and Rocky Mountain Power state that net metering is very expensive to electric utilities. That analysis is entirely limited to industry concerns. Use of renewable energy sources has a benefit in dollars to the utility and to the state if broadly analyzed. Consider these. Number one, Rocky Mountain Power, as an industry, has the ability to provide storage for excess electricity produced by renewables for the brief time between peak production and peak demand, if such a time exists. Individuals can't do that as easily. As the power is practically free to Rocky Mountain Power, the cost can be easily justified and would be help prevent the need to construct more fossil fuel facilities. This is covered by the expression avoided costs that others have used. Number two, we all know the air in the Wasatch Valley is bad. There are many actual costs and harmful physical effects from breathing the pollution. The details would fill a library. Clean, renewable energy replacing fossil fuel is always good for health. I can supply you the library of information if you actually want it. I'm sure you really don't. Number three, renewable energy machinery is a major growth industry. We are near their markets, and the state has a good atmosphere attractive to new companies. Passing this kind of fee in restraint of their business would keep any sensible company or industry from coming here. Don't make the state uncompetitive in an actively growing field. Good jobs are good for Utah. Number four, the proposed fee would apply statewide and include ranchers and farmers, places with hundreds of sunny days and high temperatures all year round, and people miles from power sources whose service can be easily interrupted. The more renewables, the bigger the safety margin for the state as a whole in case of some kind of transmission problem or disaster. That's good for Utah. Last week, I don't know if any of you are aware of it, we had a near miss by a huge solar flare that could fry transmission lines and most electronic control devices, including those in satellites, in their path. Alternative power, first aid kits, and stored water and food are all good for Utahns, and the power ability is certainly not least among those. In sum, living in earthquake country in a valley with serious air quality issues, where demand for electricity is rapidly climbing, and where drought may not allow much more water-powered electricity, use of renewable energy should not be discouraged with burdensome fees. Renewables are cost-effective for the utility and citizens and the state as a whole, and I urge you to do a long-term, thorough study of the importance of this. Thank you.
Before you leave the stand.
I'm sorry.
It's quite all right.
Any questions?
All right, thank you. Todd Stevens, followed by Mr. Baglarian. Am I saying that right? Thank you.
I'd like to give the sworn testimony.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated. And please provide your name and
sure. I am Todd Stevens, and I live in Salt Lake City. I am a Rocky Mountain customer, but not a net metering customer.
Is it S-T-E-V-E-N?
With a V, yes.
Mm-hmm. Are you representing any group here tonight?
Just myself and my business. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk with the commissioners tonight, and we appreciate the opportunity to give public input to your dockets that you're considering. Appreciate that. On July 17th, I delivered to the commissioners and to the staff a letter that was written and signed by 40 companies representing companies and municipalities in the state, asking the Public Service Commission to decline the proposal for a net meter fee, and requesting the PSC to undertake a cost-benefit analysis of this before a decision to be made. Of those 40 companies, they included eBay, Intermountain Healthcare, USANA, Overstock, Vivint Solar, my company, which is Renewable Tech Ventures. Renewable Tech Ventures is a clean tech renewable energy venture fund, the only one located here in Utah, and we've invested about $10 million in clean technology companies that are trying to solve environmental and vexing problems that we're all facing. These companies that signed on the letter asking that this be declined and that a cost-benefit analysis be undertaken. Our concern, because we think that by approving such a fee increase, we're really sending a mixed signal and a negative signal to not only residential solar users, but also commercial and company users as well. It's basically saying that clean energy is going to be penalized in Utah. Residential customers that put solar panels on their houses, as well as companies and nonprofits, cities that put in solar projects, expend a great deal of capital in putting those projects in place. And companies in particular, like eBay, before determining to expand their data center, they did an analysis and they wanted solar because they want to be good citizens here in Salt Lake and in Utah. They do analysis for cost benefits themselves to determine the value of putting in large commercial installations. And having a regulatory body decide and determine without doing any analytical study or any cost-benefit analysis really is discouraging them from considering these large commercial installations and large capital investments. It also, I think, hurts Utah from an economic development standpoint, and this was mentioned earlier. Think about Vivint Solar, who is also another signer on this letter. Vivint Solar is the second largest residential solar developer in the country, but does no work here in Utah, partly because of a policy issue related to being a public utility if they owned the solar panels, but also because, but I think that this type of a fee would be very negative towards their rolling out projects and being able to develop projects here in Utah. Also consider that many companies that the state spends millions of dollars to attract to come to Utah to relocate and to move here, many of these companies come looking at Utah as a location, and if they have an understanding that that the state has a negative position towards renewable energy. And I heard an anecdotal story from an economic development officer here in the state that a company that was coming to visit to consider relocating their business here to Utah stepped off the airplane on an inversion day this last winter and went right back on that plane the next one out because they decided they weren't interested. I think we need to be sending a signal in every way we can that we're trying to have a great environment for business here in Utah. I think this is a negative, would be a negative step in trying to attract companies to Utah and help grow our economic base here. I think that for those residents or those companies that are willing to make the investment to put solar or any other renewable energy to help offset their power consumption, they should be encouraged in every way. That's exactly what we should be hoping for, and our policy and our rates should all encourage that type of activity. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Stevens? Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Baglarian, followed by Mary Ann Wright. Mr. Baglarian, do you desire to give sworn testimony or unsworn?
I don't know what the difference is. You're going to have to enlighten me.
I'll be happy to do that. If you offer sworn testimony, you're subject to questioning by the counsel who are here representing the seven parties that have been participating in the proceeding. And if you offer an unsworn statement, then you're not subject to.
I don't mind questions. I don't think I'll have any, but.
No one else has, frankly. Okay. But we never know. Okay. Would you please stand and raise your right hand?
Sure.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated. And would you give us your name for the record, please, and your residence?
My name is Nishan Baglarian. I live here in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County.
Would you spell your name for the reporter's benefit?
Yeah, it's Beglarian. And my first name is Nishan.
Thank you.
So.
And are you a Rocky Mountain Power customer?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Are you a net metering customer?
No, no.
And are you here representing any group or as?
No, no, no. Just me and my elderly mom. So, you'll have to forgive me if my comments are kind of choppy. I'm a little nervous, but. On my way in here, I saw those people out in front of the building, and I happened to stop one of the guys and ask him what was going on, and he said it had something to do with the solar power, solar panel issue, and I kind of just, asked him, well, isn't this basically about, profit and Rocky Mountain Power wanting to maintain the monopoly that they have. Isn't that really what this is all about? But putting that aside, we get these little newsletters from Rocky Mountain Power, and this particular one, it says, Rocky Mountain Power donated more than $253,300 to nonprofit organizations in Utah during the first quarter of 2011. In total, the foundation donated more than $443,700 to groups in Utah, Wyoming, and Idaho. And that was for 2011. I can only imagine what it was or what it could be for 2014. But I was asking my mom, it's like, if they're giving money away and then run into the PSC crying poverty, asking for a rate increase, that doesn't seem right. And I'm hoping from my conversations with Gary Whitberg, he's been very thoughtful. I was hoping that, because I sent each of you guys a letter, I hope you guys actually read my letter. I'm not sure if you did, but
we read everything people send us.
Okay, that makes me feel good. But I was just, my mom's living on Social Security. She gets a $600 check a month. That's before she pays out for all the bills and stuff. And I'm sure that, I don't know if you guys live on $600 a month, but it's frustrating because part of me kind of thinks, wouldn't it be refreshing if none of us had to be here? I don't want to be here. But wouldn't it be refreshing if we could count on you guys to do the right thing and we didn't have to be here? Because you are what stands between the people and the corporations. And, I'm here because I have little or no confidence in you guys. I wish it wasn't that way, I'm hoping that you guys actually read my letter. And that's it.
Thank you.
It's not much, but.
Questions for Mr. Baglarian? No questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're excused. Marianne Wright, followed by Brent Donahue. And thank you, Mr. Donahue. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Would you give us your name and spell it for the record, please?
I'm Marianne Wright, and that's with a W-R-I-G-H-T. I am a resident of Salt Lake City. I am a Rocky Mountain Power customer, and I am a net meter. I also have solar thermal on my home.
And are you representing a group tonight or speaking on your own behalf?
I'm speaking on my own behalf, and I believe my husband also. But I feel that I must explain that I worked for 30 years regulating the coal mining industry for the state of Utah. I was the chief regulator for 15 of those years. I then spent 3 years in the governor's energy office working primarily on Utah renewable energy zones. And there I became very excited with something that I was very thrilled with as a young person, and that was solar energy. Therefore, when I finished working in the governor's office, I volunteered for Utah Clean Energy for about a year, working on energy efficiency and solar Salt Lake, which brought solar to many homes. I also have been, for the last 15 years, teaching at the University of Utah. I teach in the mining engineering program, and I teach mining engineers a required course in how to permit a mine and how to reclaim it when they're finished. So I'm a little bit bipolar here, maybe, on this, because I do believe we need resources for the future. I currently work in the community as chair of the Greater Avenues Community Council, which did not choose to enter into weighing into this issue, even though other neighborhood councils did, and they have sent you letters. So I came here on my own to tell you that my husband and I, who have worked in the mining and he in the oil and gas industries, sat down and did all the math to see about putting solar on our home, mostly at my urging. And so I held my breath as he went through the numbers, because as the son of a CPA, he had to do that. And, you know, after we spent days talking about it, we agreed on these principles that were basically in a bridge to the future of using fossil fuels. And it is just that, it is a bridge, and that putting solar on was basically the right thing to do. We are already paying a connection fee to Rocky Mountain Power, and I believe that putting yet another fee on is legally incorrect. It's morally incorrect, and it's regressive. And I would like to urge the commission to be progressive and see where we can go in the future with solar, that this is an exciting issue that we should not be making more difficult for people to do. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Wright?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brent Donahue, followed by Stephen Glines.
I'm not going to give sworn statement. Do you want me to sit anyway?
Well, you can sit, but you're also welcome to stand at the lectern, however you'd like to do it.
I'll sit. Thank you.
Please.
My name is Brent Donahue. I reside in the state of Utah. I am a customer of Rocky Mountain Power, and I'm not a net metering customer. A little background about myself is that I'm the business manager of IBW Local Union 57. My organization represents the electric utility bargaining unit employees at Rocky Mountain Power. You cannot get around the reality that every user has to pay for the hard costs, and those hard costs are labor, poles, wires, transformers, expenses that go along with making sure that the system gets taken care of. And each user has to pay their own way. And if a user doesn't pay their own way, then somebody else has to compensate and pay more money to make sure that the system is reliable and we can count on it. And so You know, this, to be clear, I think that the state needs to have a balanced policy about development of energy, and that should include solar energy. But I think the piece should be is that these folks who install solar systems, they actually they are actually causing the system to spread costs over the regular users with greater cost, and this will ultimately cause the power rates to spike, primarily harming poor and middle-class residents who spend a larger share of their income on energy. I believe that net metering is already costing the average ratepayer more money than it probably should. And so with the solar system, they should be able to pay for their own use of the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donahue. Stephen Glines, followed by Jay Vestal. And let me just mention that we're getting near a break. But
want to take it now? Or after?
Well, I think right after you, Mr. Glines.
Okay. Hi.
Do you intend to give sworn testimony?
Yes, I'm completely fine with that.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Please be seated.
My name is Stephen Glines. I live in Bountiful, Utah. I am also a Rocky Mountain customer on numerous accounts. I'm a net meter customer with Rocky Mountain. I'm also a net metered customer with Bountiful Power. And I'm applying to be a net metered customer with Murray Power.
And are you representing any group tonight?
I've not been authorized to represent anyone other than myself, although I'm a lifetime businessman, and I think I represent the business perspective. I've been a corporate businessman at an executive level, including vice presidents, and I've been an independent businessman for the rest of my career, and an entrepreneur, and I'm an investor. And during that period of time, I've done extensive cost-benefit analyses, as you can imagine. And I've done lots of modeling and trend analysis. And it was not always to maximize the most profit, although that's a very good objective in business, but it was to maximize the most value for the dollar. And I think there's been adequate testimony to show that the model you've been given is wholly inadequate. It doesn't really measure the largest cost. It doesn't include that factor of the cost to the environment and our health, the cost of carbon. It's not added in the model. And it doesn't include the largest benefit, the clean energy, which is health and the clean stabilization of the planet and the clean air shed. So this model you've been given is wholly inadequate to make the decision with. And it's not a fair job to dump this on you and make you vote on faulty data and an inadequate model. If it were my name and I were putting on it, I wouldn't put my name, historical vote, for this. It looks bad. It looks hypocritical from the general public. As it was pointed out, if you got a vote or you polled the average citizen, it doesn't line up with common sense in that it misses those major models and that you're penalizing the solution and not the cause of the problem. It's a public relations nightmare, as you've probably noticed over the last week or so. It's because it does look so bad. It looks out of balance. The model does. And I'd recommend you build a good model, because we need a stewardship to transition us through this energy crisis. We need your stewardship. We need a governing body to evaluate all this information and make the right decision. That's it. If you choose what's right, and you know what's right, make that decision, the right one, not the one that you may be pressured by either interest to serve me first. But try and rise above it and make the right one that you can live with and you'll never be criticized for. And I'm telling you that it looks hypocritical to the Blue Sky program. I've got a neighbor, another friend, Sam Raby was just here. He had to leave, but he asked me to share you his bill too. He's generated, his first year, he's generated in excess of 3,000 kilowatts so far through his July bill. He's got, and so by the end of the year, he'll have 6,000 kilowatts extra. He would love to sell that to his neighbor, Michelle. And she was standing here with her testimony. She would love to buy it. But that's not legal right now. You can't do that other than run an extension cord between each other's houses, which is a little silly. What he'd like to do is post those credits to the Blue Sky program and let her buy them on the open market of the Blue Sky that represents clean energy. That's where he wants to post his extra credits to, not to some unnamed donation that he has no control of. And when he posts those, he would like his fair tax deduction for that. And then Michelle buys it, they'll both celebrate doing the right thing. The other thing I would advise you personally against not doing it as an executive and decision maker is the liability risk that it poses. It's decisions based on a flawed model with obvious data and against all scientific advice. And it's wrought with liability risk, not only ethical liability, but litigation risk going in the future. Because I think at some point, after this all shakes out, the next generation's going to be looking for blame at who ruined their environment. And they're going to be looking for compensation for that destruction. And I wouldn't want Rocky Mountain or your good name to have a milestone on the public record of throwing another impediment to the solution. I wouldn't recommend it, personally. Does it take three votes to make the decision? Are these the three votes that decide it one way or another? Okay. I wouldn't wish that on any of the three of you as your legacy. Just do the right thing, you'll be all right. It's a bad milestone, and I'd hate to see it turn into a millstone. Other points have been well made before my comments. The peak, the definition of peak is a little silly. There's this little narrow band of peak when everybody gets off work. Well, the real peak, and that's been well documented before, the real peak's in the daylight business hours compared to the nighttime when everybody's sleeping hours. Those are the two distinct peaks. The peak's while the sun's shining. That's an easy definition. That's common sense definition. So don't let them trip you into some little narrow early evening definition of the maximum peak. Look at the big picture. Where's the big peak savings coming from? It's during daylight hours. To sum up from the business point of view, I think Mayor Becker's office did that completely adequately, and I don't need to reiterate it. This is bad for business. It sends a bad message. We're one of the highest educated states in the country. We have some of the highest longevity in the country. So how did we let ourselves get the worst air in the country? We fix that, and we will elevate. We'll live up to our state model. We'll elevate completely. And with your help, we need your stewardship. We need your guidance. And it's a lot bigger than this picture. I'll tell you why. It's just like the business automation picture. When we went from hand ledgers, I made a career of that, automating businesses to efficiency. That was a tough, expensive transition. It cost fortunes. And then navigated through the year 1000. It was very expensive, but it was necessary. When we went from party lines to mobile communication and instant data anywhere we wanted it, an information highway, that was expensive. It was difficult. And it obsoleted a lot of wires and a lot of buildings. But there were stewards that took us through that transition. And we need that energy transition. We need to go from the toxic model to the clean model. We need to go from the past to the future, and we need stewards making, coordinating us to do it all. We also need an infrastructure. We need Rocky Mountain Power. They need to provide that infrastructure grid. And you need a model to guide this transition from dirty and unhealthy to clean and sustainable. And as you do it, you need to have a complete model that has all the costs and all the benefits. And I'm okay, believe it or not, with the solar tax to help support the grid, peculiarly enough. But only if it has a counterbalancing carbon tax to accompany it, to account for the toxicity and damage. So let's count for the benefits, let's count for all the costs, let's build a perfect model with both a solar tax and a carbon tax, or let's both leave them off the table until we can have an adequate model to do a good job. Please. I'm open for questions.
Questions for Mr. Glines? No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a 10-minute recess until 20 after the hour. Some of you might be wondering about our progress. We've heard from 14 witnesses. I'm aware of 32 more. There may be another list that's circulating, but just so you know where we stand. Thank you, and we'll see you at 20 after the hour.
Did I really get us another?